it's time to start buying real estate again.
Power is going to restore 15 to 20 million jobs.
What about me?
I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
Where are our national leaders?
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. Serving southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and of course, northern Delaware on the radio. However, you can tune in anytime on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link, or you can listen anytime simply by going to American Workers Radio again and click on the Listen Anytime link, which is really been generating a lot of interest from our supporters as they send that link out to family members and friends. You can always help us by spreading the word about our Buy American Made campaign. Our 2019 theme is working together for the best interests of America and American workers. That was a theme that I thought was really good, because what better way for us to unite people to make sure that the message of Buy American Made gets out to the public. Well, I wanted to mention that this Friday is Flag Day, and we are urging everyone to display your flags now through Veterans Day to make sure everyone knows how proud you are to be an American. And that'll also alert people that they should fly their flags and participate at all the events that will be coming up in the future. This Friday is Flag Day, and then we're going to have the 4th of July, all the summer events. Then we'll be going into Veterans Day. So put your flag out and, of course, help us get the message out to the general public that we are united with our flag. I want to say, first of all, thank you to our panel members who give us their time, energy each week. And they include Mark Andel, who is the well-known founder of the Made in America store, marking his 9th anniversary this year. And we'll be speaking with him today on many issues. Also, Larkin Connolly, National Small Business Advocate, and Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, is a faithful supporter. He will be on a special assignment today. I also want to say a thank you to Curtis Ellis, who is out promoting the Jobs First Project. As you know, Curtis does an awful lot of interviews on radio and on television, so we're happy that he's able to spend as much time with us as he does. And of course, our very capable engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, always doing his best to make sure that message gets out to the people. And that's really what it's all about, getting the message out to the public. I really believe that because of our efforts, people say, Michael, you guys are focused and consistent. You never, you know, give up on your message. You have a lot of fun in the process, which we do, and we'll have some fun today as well. I'm Michael Blihash, always proud to be your host and trying to get more and more people to join our movement. You know, last week we discussed the immigration laws signed by President Clinton way back in 1996. And many people that I saw, I had the great opportunity to attend 4 various events this past weekend. And they told me many of them did not know that such a bill existed. Many of them were younger people at graduations and things. They had no idea that such a bill was enacted. Now people want to know why America's laws have not been enforced. Why have we just enacted a law and then sat back and did nothing about it? If we did enact it, it would certainly save taxpayers and the American workers billions of dollars every week. We're spending so much money throughout the United States through the welfare system, all these relocation programs, all the border guards that are there. It's billions and billions of dollars being spent for things that could be used for other important needs in our communities. And in fact, I say that because many of the community services had to be reduced because the monies had to be put to all of these programs over the years. Now, in the last few days, we also heard that Mexico was a big problem. For many, many years, they knew about the laws in America, but they continued to allow people to walk through the country and do whatever they chose. And that also allowed our workers to be hurt as people worked under the table. And now we find that we have all these people in the country. Many are still working under the table, and we have no way to do anything about it. Also, as you heard, on Friday, June the 7th, President Trump announced that the United States has reached a signed agreement with Mexico to stop the caravans reaching the southern border. How Mexico is going to do that is they're going to stop the caravans from coming on their southern border and hopefully slow down the people coming to the American border. The big question we all have is, why did it take the threat of tariffs to be imposed on Mexico, monthly increase in the tariff? And the people were expecting that it was going to go on and on as a war, but President Trump and the president of Mexico and his representatives sat down and they came up with this agreement, and they're going to see what happens in the next 90 days. The thing I like about this point is that for the next 3 months, Mexico and America have a fair opportunity to fix difficulties. Probably there are still some illegals trying to get to the border in the system, but in 90 days, we'll see if there is going to be anything that's going to reduce and even eliminate immigration coming through Mexico to the United States. And when I say through Mexico, I mean it's not all Mexican people. It's people coming from various countries, coming to Mexico's southern border, walking through Mexico, and trying to enter the United States. So I compliment the President of Mexico and President Trump for both working together to avoid these tariffs and to see what can be done to help America remain strong as it should have been. Also, I feel that we should obey the laws that were signed by President Clinton, agreed to the House and Senate back in 1996. Why there's no discussion taking place on the regular basis in the news media simply amazes me. They talk about everything else, but there's no talk whatsoever about obeying a law which is actually something that would help our people, not hurt them. With that, as I said many times in the past, we cannot reward bad behavior. So it's really up to all of us to make sure that our elected people know where we stand, give them a call. In fact, on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, you will see a link on the bottom. It says, contact your elected officials here. Just click on that and it'll take you to your state, wherever you put in your state. You put in your zip code and it'll let you know immediately who your elected official is. And let's take some time and give ourselves a second chance with all that's going on. With that, I want to turn to Mark Andel. Mark, you heard me talk already for a few minutes. How is everything with you? And what are you hearing about from people in the store or on your travels as well? What are they thinking about all this that went and took place in the last few days?
Yeah, a lot going on. Mike, how are you? Mike, and I think we got Larkin on, and Henry's always making us sound good. So, you know, Mike, a lot going on. Made in America, you know, the store, the mission, the movement's alive and vibrant. We had a nice bus full of 52 people last night about 5 o'clock, and we gave them dinner and everything. They're from Indiana, but they're from a lot of different parts of the state. A lot of people still love what we're doing. This tour group leader, husband, wife, they own their own bus. They've been to our store before, but they more than love it. They respect what we stand for, and the people had a ball. All the people weren't here before, so 50 people got to see the Made in America store. They know we do the homework for them, and they were really blown away, but it shows that the mission's alive and well, and the demographic's 50 years old, probably to 95, and they just appreciate our efforts, but you know, all of our efforts. We talk about the radio show. We talk about what we're doing, even the big Made in America event by Don Buckner this fall. And they love it, and they say we need it. We bring up skilled trades. We talk about the shortage in schools. You know, the kids aren't exposed to any of these metal shops, wood shops. And, you know, but with the immigrants, the biggest thing I've seen, too, when they're coming in, a lot of people, not only the border towns, these illegal immigrants were coming in, and then they're placing them throughout the United States in other towns, I think Minnesota, wherever they're dropping these immigrants, and they kind of form a country within a country. That probably bothered me the most, Mike, hearing that, that's going on, that they're busting them all over the United States, you know, once they do get in. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
That is a fact, Mark. I have to tell you, that is a fact. Every state is receiving these people, and they are going into communities that become, you know, very unfortunate because
they're not learning our language.
They're not learning the language, and many think that, you know, that everything has to be given to them. This is simply not appropriate.
They're not earning nothing, or they're just really using us.
Absolutely.
Contributing to us.
And you know, Mark, every person listening has to understand that, whether it's a person who is driving the bus, the cost of the bus to get the illegal immigrants to a city where they could be resettled, you know, at for being forced by the welfare departments of the various states to resettle these people. That's all costing the taxpayers. That means you and me are paying a dollar for something that a law's been on the books for over 23 years and has not been obeyed because the people in the House and the Senate simply said we don't want to hurt anybody.
Yeah,
well,
so,
you're hurting the taxpayers.
Yeah, in a strong city. Say it's even South Dakota. I hear all these stories from buses and where they're dropping people in, but these small towns and cities can't even take care of their own. Then they're stressed to try to take care of new illegal immigrants, and then the locals are forced to pay more taxes to cover it. It's crazy when you start digging into it, Mike, how this ever got rolling, and everybody isn't jumping on the bandwagon where we've got to control this.
You know, Mark, I have to tell you that if you look at the debt clock on American Workers Radio, you can go to the U.S. debt clock, you will see that the debt continues to rise every second. And that's because we pay interest on the debt. And, of course, a lot of the new people coming here illegally, they had to hire all these new people at the border and in the various states to sort of settle these people. All that's coming out of our money. How can this continue to go on? You know, when you look at these people that are running for president, they're out on the campaign trail talking about giving everything away and the kitchen sink as well. I said to a young lady who came around and wanted to know if we wanted to welcome a particular candidate for president in Philadelphia. And I said, well, you know, I have a lot of concerns about these people. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, if these are elected officials paid to do a job to represent the people in the communities where they live, then they should be kept on a time card and take off the taxpayers' money when they're out on the campaign trail. That means as soon as they leave their office, they get on the plane and the train and the buses. We should not be paying for that. And when you have over 20 people running for office, a large number of them are elected people, that means we continue to pay the bill. We're being slapped in the face from every angle by people who want to be something more than they are today. And I really think that should be addressed. See, the national news media would never bring that up. They figure, hey, if we do say something, then everybody's going to, we won't have anything to cover. But it's a fact. I mean, if you go out on the road, Mark, you pay your own bill. Your employee goes out on the road, you pay the bill because he's representing you. Well, those people are representing we, the taxpayers. They should be doing their job in Washington. In fact, sometimes I hear from people, and Larkin had said this a number of times, we should return to a part-time Congress and Senate. I think them sitting in Washington and in their offices, wherever they are in various states, they are taking up too much time, energy, coming up with too many bills, too many ideas that cost we, the taxpayers, money, and it's really been unfair. Larkin, what do you say to that?
Yeah, good morning, Michael. How are you? Good morning to all of our listeners, to Henry. Again, as Mark likes to say, for making us sound so good. Although as hard as he works, I still don't come off as a terribly smart individual. Whatever. You know, listen, I have to laugh at everything that you've said, because last week our Congress, the House of Representatives, ran a pay raise up the flagpole. They wanted a $4,200 and some odd dollar raise, and a commensurate raise in their expenses, that for their monthly expenses. And the fallout was so overwhelming that they have withdrawn any such proposal. Congress has not had an increase for 11 years, and the one they got 11 years ago was too much.
And not only that, Larkin, but these people have 1,001 perks. In addition, it should be known, to what they get as a regular payroll, they are heavily compensated for being on the various committees. And this is something most people don't know.
The one that cracks me up is that Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House, and then she lost. Well, the Democrats lost control of the House. And John Boehner and a few others came in and took over. Nancy Pelosi, during that 8 or 10 year period where the Democrats did not have control of the House, still was paid Speaker of the House wages. Still made the same amount of money, even though she wasn't doing the job. So I think that ought to be considered. You know, I think all welders, Mark, ought to get time and a half just because they're working. I mean, if they show up time and a half, of course, Mark would probably pay time and a half to get his hands on some great welders. But, you know, when we talk about trade school and trade school graduates this year, I got involved in a conversation in another county here in Florida with a guy that it prompted me to want to go back and see just how we did in 2018-19 with our trade school graduates. And it kind of cracked me up. I'm going to probably give you guys the remainder of the show to guess the answer to this question. But can anybody tell me the number one trade school or best jobs? Let's put it that way. The best jobs for a trade school graduate, what would the number one be, economic opportunity?
Mark?
Well.
A welder?
Yeah, I'm thinking truck driver, Larkin.
No.
Auto mechanic?
Nope. The answer is elevator installer and repairer.
Really?
No. Yes. How well I know that, Larkin. You know this building, you know how that elevator has to be inspected constantly.
The radiator therapist is 2. Petroleum technician, 3. Web developer, diagnostic medical sonogrammer, dental hygienist, an electrician, respiratory therapist, plumber, and then an HVAC technician.
And welder's not
Welder is not on here, which to me kind of takes a little credence away from the survey. But and this is done by an organization called Careers. Listen, we're starting to catch on, though. Mark, don't you get that feeling? I mean, we're starting to catch on that these jobs are important, and we're starting to fill them. And people are starting to realize how expensive it is and what the price tag is that comes with a bachelor's degree from college. And, you know, while education is key, and I'm not short-selling education, few jobs require only a high school diploma to earn $35,000. And not everyone wants to go to college. Not everyone can afford college. It is in that light, what everybody's understanding, that I think that these blue-collar, and you can call them blue-collar as opposed to white-collar, but these trade-oriented technical jobs are coming into their own. And as this develops, so does our infrastructure.
You're right, Larkin. I have to tell you, I have never seen so many new businesses opening in and around Philadelphia. We're seeing industrial parks open. We're seeing industrial parks expand. They are making things. They are trying to compete with the foreign-made products. I have never seen anything like it. In fact, I looked up on the internet. I passed by a brand new industrial park that's just being built. And so I thought, wow, what is that going to be? So I went on the internet. And of course, they're half filled with the businesses that they're going to be in there. And they're welcoming new businesses. And the businesses that are going to be in there are already manufacturing sweaters, jackets, things that we haven't seen for a long time. Everything that fans were wearing at the football games and at the baseball games, all made in foreign countries, brought over here, and they imprinted the team logo on it, and that's how the license was permitted through the franchise. This is now starting to change as people are saying, wait a minute, I'm wearing everything foreign. What the heck is going on? So it's with this type of mentality, you're going to see a major change. And Larkin, for the good of this, as I go around, I question everybody. You know I like to do that stuff. The supply chain in America is getting better. Remember how, Larkin, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you said the supply chain is broken? And that's a fact.
It collapsed.
It collapsed. But, you know, as businesses see the benefit of staying in America, that they're not going to be over-regulated and they'll get some tax breaks. The only thing I'd like to still see is businesses get a tax write-off for training people within a six-month period and be able to write that person off as they're training for the job. Because as you talked about a second ago, you have a lot of schools that, you know, went totally academic, very little trades. Now, I have to tell you, University of Delaware has a representative, and hopefully in the near future we'll be able to have some of those people on to talk about the new programs that they have instituted in the last 2 years. And I will let them speak about it, but I've been speaking to Darlene and David and everybody about it, and the representatives are going to be getting together and deciding when we could get together to talk about that. Everybody's getting on the bandwagon. By the way, the business owners are saying, how can I expand in America if I don't have any employees to hire?
Yeah, and it's being said all over, Larkin, like you said, Mike. I mean, lately it's coming out. Even my father just mentioned, hey, you know, they had a big thing on TV about the skilled trade shortage. And I said, that's what we've been talking about 10 years. You know, I was just picking on him. But he was. They were saying you can't grow this economy, just like we've said for years, without having the skilled trades, the workforce. You can't, one doesn't go without the other. And what we were talking on the other day, you want people to earn and contribute with a good wage. So that's what people, we got to connect with what we talk about. The consumer has the most power. We want them to buy a top quality made in America product, support the country we live in. But you want to have a quality job with a good livelihood, and that's where that middle, you know, that blue collar, middle income family came from, and that's what we need back. And we got to grow that middle income family, and it's all one big circle that we've got to contribute. And I see it moving, but now it's out nationally that there's the shortage, and it took so long to get them to, you know, if you can't convince them, we confuse them. But you know, to get them to admit that there's a problem.
You know, I have to tell you this, Mark, and Larkin, you're going to love this. I went to a store to pick up some light bulbs. And as I'm in the store, they have those places where you go automatically and you know, check out. And they had one lane open with a live person doing it. So there were about six people in line and very few people in the self-checkout. So I went and I thought to myself, I don't have time to be waiting over here. And I'm not going into that self-checkout line because that means somebody's job is on the line. You could put one section if you're so, you want to check out faster or whatever. God bless you. So I went over to the manager at the desk. It's a major hardware store. I don't want to mention their name, but I go over and I says, why is this going on? Look at these people want to check out in the line. They have big items. They can't be dragging that through the self-checkout. So he sent over two additional cashiers. And guess what? The people who were in the self-checkout ran over to the cashiers. because, you know, and they agreed, and I complained. I was loud enough. I said, you know, this is taking away our jobs, and I'm wasting time. I said to the guy, are you being paid to do your job? And he said, oh, of course. And I said, well, these people are buying stuff so they can out. Can it go out and either fix their home or supply the items to a customer? Get behind the cash registers and let's cut this nonsense. And two additional cashiers came out, and all the people ran to the cashiers.
And, you know, I wanted to add to Mark's point, because it's really a great point, about the pay for skilled technical labor. This country was built on free enterprise. It was built on supply and demand. There was a demand. If you could supply that demand, you were going to be a successful individual. Well, guess what? That works for the employees also. You know, and Mark, you're probably walking evidence of this. When you're looking for welders, and there aren't a lot of welders on the street, guess what happened to the welders' wages? They go up because they're in demand, and in order for you to accomplish what your welding company wants to do, you have to have good welders.
Yeah.
So this is just like reason 1257 of why democratic socialism won't work. Let's pay everybody the same damn wage. Let's pay everybody a living wage.
You know, Larkin, have you seen any candidate on the road, which I don't want them to be paid while they're out campaigning? I think they should keep a time card on that. But have you seen any one of these people letting people know how they're going to earn a dollar?
No, they don't answer questions like that, Michael. That's not the point.
How do they earn a dollar? How does the taxpayer continue to have all these people on the taxpayers' rolls? It's impossible to do. I think that every one of them would benefit if they gave us both sides. Because we're going to have so many jobs, because we're going to have so many job skills, we are going to be able to help the less fortunate. But no, it's all, we're all one. We're all socialists. We're all in the same pot of soup. But who is going to pay the bill? They can look in communist Russia to see how that's doing. They could look in Cuba and all the other places to see what socialism and communism has done. It's a flop. People have no initiative to do anything.
Yeah, it's just such a different world. You've got to, you know, the wage, like we talk about, the other side of that, mandating, like in New York, a $15 minimum wage and whatnot, going around these summer places or the restaurants that are just part-time over the summer, businesses that just run 6 months, it's really a problem for them. You see them understaffed because now they can't, they were mandated to do something you can't. Again, it was a stepping stone job. That's a problem, too, mandating that minimum wage to business owners that are trying to have a perceived value on something, the service they're providing. That's just a whole nother angle, you know, issue, too. But the other thing I want to bring up with the Amazons and the Walmarts and the, you know, we're competing. I talked to Dave Hurley, owner of Kitchen Craft, and even my brother with our truck equipment. People are selling stuff without a lot of cost to it on the internet and whatnot, especially Amazon. You can't, all we really have as a business, a smaller business, to sell is customer service. And Mike, you're talking about the, you know, the checkout lines, and there's no relationship or talk there. So we've got to really, as a smaller business in this change in this world and economy, we really only have extreme customer service to sell to compete with the Amazons of the world, and that's a whole other thing going on. So a lot of change in this, you know, everything's a moving platform.
And, you know, Mark, if Amazon had 50% of the products that they were selling made in America, then we would not be, you know, concerned
right.
about it. But
boy,
what they're
help.
Doing
right.
is Amazon is working with all of the places to date that have foreign stuff. They can offer the best price, and they make it convenient for the person not to go to the store. By the
right.
time they get to the store, the gas, the parking, and everything else, they make it very convenient for you, but they don't list on the internet site if it's made in America or foreign made.
Right.
I've asked two people about that, and they said, Michael, that's going to be a tough sell because, number one, you have most of the products sold on Amazon foreign made. So why would they want to bring attention, your attention as an American customer, to a fact that they're selling mainly foreign made stuff? But, you know, we're getting to the point. The supply chain is getting much better. And I'm asking everybody who's listening, and you'll hear this broadcast later, do email it out to family and friends, because manufacturers and distributors of American-made products, whatever they are, certainly appreciate the customers who are coming in the stores or shopping online to purchase them. As Larkin, you know, operating a business of any size in the United States, it certainly takes a lot of commitment, and companies and workers really need faithful customers to support them. Like Mark, when you go on the internet, check out Mark's store, buy some of the stuff that he has there. He'll ship it to you. Let's look out for people who are looking out for us. That's our message from day one. It's already 20 years this year that I've been pushing that message. And that's what it's really, you know, all about. If we don't push ourselves as Americans, who's going to push us? Foreigners?
It's a touch of a catch-22 situation also. We have to continue to encourage people to look at the label, because that segment of Made in America is constantly growing. But on the other hand, when Amazon wants to supply a Briggs and Stratton, how much more American do you get than a Briggs and Stratton engine? I mean, they've made lawnmower engines. They're probably the number one manufacturer as far as quality.
Now you're going back to my roots there, Larkin.
Yeah, right.
Small engine Mark.
You're right. Small engine Mark, exactly. And it's not made in America. I mean, you know, come on, guys. So it's a very careful catch-22. I don't think we can get too angry at the Amazons and Walmart and the rest of the online people unless they're given an opportunity to compare two products, and they don't give a nationalistic, is such a word that has gotten such bad press up lately. But you really do have to give the edge to the guy that lives next door who makes that Briggs and Stratton engine when it returns to this country. And guess what? He's going to turn around and buy your landscaping service. You know, it's a back-stretching contest. But to build that is going to take some time. It really is. We really, heck with the jobs going to China. What killed us was the infrastructure. It just, if some guy was sitting out in California and said, oh, my Lord, I was listening to Mark Andel the other day, and they don't manufacture a toaster in this country, I'm going to do that. No, you aren't. Because the componentry that makes that toaster isn't manufactured in this country anywhere. You can't buy those little glowing strips that take, you know, so many amps and volts and, you know, ultimately toast the toast. They're not made in this country. That General Electric got out of the small appliance business, and those people went away.
Now, Larkin, let me ask you.
They ran away.
Let me ask you this. How impossible would you say it is going to be to restore those little appliances back in the USA?
Well, we're going to need to go out on the street and start looking for more Mark Andels. You know, it's going to take somebody who sees the opportunity, knows that of all of the appliances built in the world, of all the appliances built in this universe, there's not a weaker appliance than a toaster. It's the worst thing. I buy a new one every year. I test it out and throw it out the window and go buy another one. I can't find a toaster that works. Mark's works, but I have to stand there and keep an eye. I have to stand there and keep an eye on it and know when to flip it.
You know, an answer to that question too. You're right. You got to find somebody. You got to have that want. You know, fill not want. But I think we can do it if we all want to. But I think we can combine technology The latest technology, Mike, the latest automation. There's so many ways we could get it done, and we just got to have the want to do it. And Larkin, you hit it again. We got to continue to be consistent with our message, educate and raise awareness about looking at the label, getting people to get involved and do their part. It just reminds me of the American-made movie again, Do Your Part. And that movie, again, says it all. You know, people got to not just buy for the experience. They got to buy because they know it. Purchasing something creates an opportunity for somebody to have a great job and a successful life here.
Man, that couldn't be said better, Mark. How is it going to spark a new day in America? Maybe we have to have a national contest or something. What new products? Maybe we have to start looking out to some of these businesses to see what are the newest markets that they're doing, what are the newest products that they're offering to the public, and start getting these people to join our movement.
Because, and remember, guys, it can't just be about the portfolio. Out of 9,000 products I have, and we are over 500 privately owned American businesses, remember, not one of my products is a publicly traded company. It's the story of America.
That's right.
Everybody followed. They're a slave to the shareholder. Every 3 months, they got to give them a dividend. That's the problem. I remember working with the movie crew, and we both found out about the same time, going, "Wow, that's weird. You don't have one publicly traded company, not one, to this day, that makes a Made in America product that can sell." Think about that.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. That's really, really
dollar,
scary.
No matter what anybody says.
Well, I don't think it's scary. It kind of makes me laugh. I mean, it makes me feel good because the free enterprise system is working, and I'm not a Walmart person. I'm kind of not an Amazon person. Although I know if I want,
we
a book,
love you so much, Larkin.
If I want a book and I need it badly, I can have it tomorrow. So we've got to overcome that. That's what Mark is saying. We have got to learn how to do what Amazon does. And they don't do it with size, and they don't do it with money. They do it with discipline. They do it with the culture. And, it's just like the guy at your hardware, your Home Depot. You're at your hardware store, letting those people line up. Never. Publix has what they call Publix grocery stores, has an assistant customer service person, and all that person does is walk up and down that front aisle that looks at the cash registers to make sure that there's nobody waiting in line for more than one or two deep. And I spoke to this young lady who did that job, and I said, "What else do you do?" And she said, "Well, I give this cashier a half hour off and put this one on here, and I move the cashiers around. But I open and close lanes, and I make sure that no customer ever has to stand there twiddling his or her thumbs waiting to be waited on. We've got 15 lanes here. I can open all 15 and get everybody out of here. Ipso facto. And guess what? They'll come back."
Yeah.
Because they know that that's the way we operate. And that's essentially what Mark is saying. As small business people, we have to understand that there's no reason in the world why we can't compete with Amazon. The leg up they have is that by virtue of their size, when anybody thinks, I need a crumb rate and it needs to be purple, they know that they can type in crumb rate at Amazon, and it's going to come up with 15 different selections. That's the hard part. But what the small business guy, a small business individual has to do is get their name out one at a time to people who understand that they're the very best. And I would use as my example, my best example, my daughter-in-law, my oldest boy, Larkin Jr.'s wife, just has opened a company called Sweet Elephant and Bakery. And she just opened Bricks and Mortar the other day, but she's been online. And she has never received a complaint. Never. And people ask me all the time, how does she do this? How does she make a cookie that is as good as that cookie is? And he said, and I say, and I'll say to anybody, she has never forgotten that no good cookie maker ever skimped on the butter. And when you do, it's not a cookie anymore. And it's amazing. Sweet Elephant. I mean, she is so busy now. She has to quit a job as a head buyer for a home products company that manufactures siding and roofing. She's got a huge and great job with them, and she's got to quit and do something that she loves. And guess what? You want cookies? She has Cookie of the Month Club. I've given it to several of my friends who then call back and say, can I tell you what I want for Christmas next year? Cookie of the Month. But it's going to take that kind of ingenuity, that kind of dedication to quality, not willing to cut corners, and to do things for a reasonable price that's going to really bring back the small business in America. It's already on. It's already picking up day in and day out. And Michael, you're 100% right. They're opening. And guess what, guys? Number one reason, Mr. Trump's economy. I don't care what anybody else says about what Barack Obama did or anything else that happened. Donald Trump's economy is almost solely responsible for the just outrageous growth that we're seeing right now. Everybody's back to work. It's just, you know, the Democrats want to spoil it all by putting an unhappy look on your face. I couldn't get over them going after the president because he actually struck part of the deal 3 months ago with Mexico. What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, that was demented to me. I mean, these deals don't happen overnight. If people are negotiating for 2-3 months to get it to where it should be, God bless them. The problem is the press wants to look down their nose instead of looking up at all the possibilities that could happen. You know, Larkin, every time an illegal person comes to this country, it costs us money. Everyone listening, every person in the USA, whether it's a penny, a dime, or a dollar, it costs us money. When the people in the press say, oh, these children are coming over. Well, let me tell you, as a parent and a grandparent, I can say I would not see my daughter, none of their kids, be left running to another country. I would try to make the country where I live better. I would look for that kind of help, not to drag a child to a strange country and try to make, you know, that child whole in a new land and rebuild their life. I agree that the countries should do their best to keep their people there, get more jobs, better facilities for the people to live. But that's not America's job. We can't be responsible for men, women, or children coming over America's borders illegally. We have laws. It's not a Democrat law or a Republican law. It was signed by the House and Senate and submitted to the president in 1996, President Clinton. He signed it. It went into law. And because people in the Civil Liberties Union and all said, oh, my goodness, that's terrible. We've been knocking down people instead of building them up. We can't build people up if we have, as you say so often, Larkin, children going to bed hungry every night.
Why? 20% of our own. Yep.
Yes. How can we allow our own people to be pushed aside to give new people priority? That's not good. And that's part of the problem. Another thing that people, we're now in the heavy graduation season. People love what we're talking about. I was pushing resumes for the last few months. But many people said, you know, Michael, the problem is when I went to school, I had all those programs and trades available. My kids go to the schools. They have all computer possibilities, no hands-on trades. After 25 years of all of the stuff being manufactured overseas, that is why we're seeing nobody in America eligible to fill the jobs that we need. That's why we're seeing it.
I've got a new initiative that I was going to wait for everybody to be back so everybody could be involved. But it's just so appropriate right now. And I know Mark will have a handful. The next time we get together, Mark will have a handful of these. But I have a new initiative called the Signs That the Wheels Are Falling Off the Wagon. And my first entry to that is a sign that the wheels are falling off the wagon would be that if you want to get a driver's license, I don't know about anywhere else, but I do know about Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you want to get a driver's license, you can get a driver's license speaking 14 different languages. You can learn to drive in this country speaking any one of 14 languages.
That's right.
That's a sign that the wheels are falling off the wagon.
Right. Right. You know, the English language united us for 243 years. People came to this country and they said, well, the most important thing that I have to do is learn the English language so I can be part of the American mainstream. You could speak your foreign language at home, at special gatherings and all. But if you go to City Hall, why should they have a bilingual specialist hired to cater to you when you, as a person 30 or 40 years old, should be learning the English language and be able to communicate? Your children are in a school where they're learning the language. They should come home and only speak one language at home. As a person of Polish heritage, we spoke English and Polish. It's why we know what we know. And that's why even my own family, my kids, they know quite a bit of the language, because we try to promote who we are, be proud of who we are as our heritage. But we are most proud of being Americans. We are united. America first.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, you should, we are the great mosaic of the world. And at no point in time did any of us say, we don't want any immigrants coming here anymore. No, we never said that. But we want them coming here legally. We want them to go through the process. There are few people that I work with through our social service agency that came here and they didn't have to go through a process. Some had to wait 3, 5, 7 years for the whole family reunification process, but they all came here legally. How can we expect people coming over the border and all of a sudden come to the country, then the American government allows the welfare system to drive these people on buses to a dozen and one states and communities and put the burden of these young people, old people, and in between on people where they're trying to do their best to earn a living, keep their homes and properties up. And they can't do it because there's constantly a new focus, a new initiative coming in to their community. It's some new people coming in to work under the table to take their job away, to take their stability away. We've already been through this. Mark, I'm sure if I asked you 30 years ago when you went shopping for a jacket or a sweater or a pair of shoes, where were most of those items made?
Yeah, I talked to my father about it all the time. He worked at Bethlehem Steel and Ford. You know, again, in Bethlehem days, it was all, they didn't bring a foreign product to Bethlehem Steel in Buffalo. They flipped the whole semi over if you did.
Right.
You know, it was respected. Made in America symbol, still respected around the world for top quality. People forget that.
How did we reach the point where 3 years ago, 5 years ago, we can walk into stores, Larkin, and 80 to 90% of the products on the hangers are foreign made? How did we reach that point? Who advised that? Who permitted it? Who thinks that was the best thing to do for this country and the workers and the stability of the United States?
The answer to that question that you've asked so many times, Michael, I've thought about it and thought about it. And I think I know the answer now after giving it considerable thought. I don't know that you can point the finger at anybody that allowed this to happen. Nobody didn't allow it to happen.
That's right.
That's the problem.
Yes.
Nobody stood up and said, we can't do this. Nobody. No politicians, no manufacturers, no corporations, no workers, no nothing. the union workers were so concentrated on the dollar and the number of pieces that they had to do and the workload and la-la-la, that all their jobs were being yanked away and taken to another country, and they never at one point stopped and said, wait a minute, what's going on here?
They didn't know what they were selling out, yeah.
That's right. And you're right, Larkin. You know, you just take, for instance, like the clothing workers in the United States. There was the Amalgamated Clothing Workers had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of union members all over the country. That's dropped down to a small amount of people because all those workers are now employed in China. And as Mark will tell you, China is a far walk to work.
You know, Bob Chesro, owner of Wigwam, we've talked about that many times, and he said a lot of these textile industries through government trade deals were given away. He said, wait, that was our livelihoods. So a lot of deals gave away a lot of the work. And, you know, but people didn't have their eye on the livelihood. They had their eye on the dollar in the portfolio a lot. It was all about profit margin, too.
And the consumer got excited because they could go to Walmart and buy a $2 toy. Right. They could buy more stuff for their storage unit.
Yeah, their storage unit. Or, better yet, if you buy something on Christmas and within 10 days, it's out in the trash because it's broke, it cracked, whatever. And the people feel, oh, instead of me getting all worked up about it, just trash it and be done with
Remember,
it.
Remember, we used to talk, it's a culture change. We wanted to teach people, have to be taught, if it's a gun, a garden hose, whatever, that a quality product lasts years, longevity. You buy it once, you have it, you pass it on. Now it's the throwaway world again. And that's what happened.
Yeah, you know, any businessman that wants to expand their product lines in the United States certainly needs the help of the American consumer. If you go out, if someone is investing in a business and or it's an investor who's doing something special to expand product lines, they want to know that the American people are going to support it. Yes, it may cost 50 cents and maybe even a dollar more. But the bottom line is you're going to the store knowing that the label that says made in the USA is going to cost you a little more, but you're also providing a livelihood for someone who is able to be making that product and getting it to the store where you shop.
You know, there always for years, for my entire life, there was always that Brooks Brothers emblem. Brooks Brothers was a company that manufactured a shirt that was 100% broadcloth cotton. There was no skimping on this shirt. They were double-stitched on all the seams. It just was a quality shirt. And my brother used to get one for his birthday, and I'd end up wearing that thing 9 years later. So that was good old-fashioned quality. And Brooks Brothers competed, and they competed, and they competed. And guess what? They couldn't survive. They ultimately got bought for 10 cents on the dollar by some clothing retailer of sorts. And they're just a shell of who they used to be.
Yep.
My wife and I were in Brooks Brothers down here in the mall. I walked in to explain to my wife why I always like to wear Brooks Brothers. Every shirt in the store made in Indonesia. Every shirt. They had to compete in order to survive. So it becomes an issue. You want to survive.
You know, Larkin, I'd like to hear that story another way, if it was possible, and whether it's Brooks Brothers or any other company. If they want to support their country, maybe it's time that we start promoting the idea that a company can have foreign-made products with a label that's listing them as foreign-made, and they can also feature the same items made in the USA. Larkin, if you went to Brooks Brothers, and I've gotten different stuff from them too, I only buy the Made in America stuff. They still have places in Brooklyn that they manufacture ties and shirts and stuff like that. But and they still have the quality that you're talking about. But I'd like to go to those Brooks Brothers stores and see. 50% of the items on display, and I make the decision whether I want to pay $3 more for a product made in America or I want to buy the thing that's made foreign.
Yep, Mike, like I've got Texas jeans, which are made here, but Levi's and Wranglers aren't. You know, it's a shame that these top brand names, people think and assume they are, but they're not. You know, I went for a sneaker at Dick's 3 weeks ago, but I, of course, started to trouble like Michael Blehash does, you know, and said, hey, there are hundreds of pairs, which one's made in America? Well, I knew New Balance had some. So they had one, though, New Balance out of the 10 New Balance that were made here, one pair of sneakers, and I ended up buying them. But I caused a little trouble, and they were with me, but it's amazing that nobody has the care or want enough to, you know, make that sneaker in this country, because there's enough volume there to do it, I believe.
You know, Larkin and Mark, I have to tell you a little funny story. I was out at a festival, and somebody came to start this discussion with me about the Made in America label and all, and there's more things made in America and blah, 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 blah. I said, so they were, people were dancing and having a good time. I said, you know, I looked over and I said, if I had to ask every person in here to take off every item that they're wearing right now that is foreign made, I'd like to see the scene that we would see. Now, dude, Mark, you can do that at any of your festivals. When you're doing something at the Made in America store, you just say, everything that is not made in America, we want it off.
If I was the one at that party, Mike, I'd been the only one clothed. I would have stood out.
You know, this
I bought two of those Texas jeans at this shop, and I can't get in them. So they're now my weight loss goal is to get back in my Texas jeans. So thank you, Mark.
That's our fault.
Because you never know when you'll meet Blehash and he'll pull out this contest and we'll go wild.
You make me feel good. I'm 100% every day right down to the underwear, Mike. Just in case that's ever called.
You know, this Sunday is Father's Day. I'd like to extend a special happy Father's Day to all the fathers and grandfathers in our audience. Remember, Friday is Flag Day. Please display your flag proudly and leave it up through Veterans Day to let everybody know that you are proud to be an American, and that'll also encourage people to know that about the efforts that we're trying to do to make America great again. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear by the music, it is time for us to say goodbye. We had a great conversation. This was a great family conversation today. I'd like to encourage you to make sure that you go out of your way to shop locally, look for American made, and of course, spread the word about our broadcast. We will have a rebroadcast of today's show up on the internet a little later on today. Thanks for tuning in until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11. I thank all of you. Thanks, Larkin. Thank you, Mark. And thank all of the people, including Henry Chaplinsky, our engineer, for being such an important part of our message. Have a great one.
All right, guys. Have a great week.